His feet hit the ground so hard that his knees buckled. The kettle clattered to the ground, and somewhere close at hand a voice said,
"Back again, the blood traitor brats! Is it true their father's dying?"
"Out!" roared a second voice. Harry scrambled to his feet and looked around. They had arrived in the gloomy basement kitchen of number 12 Grimald Place. The only sources of light were the fire and one guttering candle which illuminated the remains of a solitary supper. Creature was disappearing through the door to the hall, looking back at them malevolently as he hitched up his loincloth. Sirius was hurrying toward them all, looking anxious. He was unshaven and still in his day clothes. There was also a slightly Mundungus-like whiff of stale drink about him.
"What's going on?"
he said, stretching out a hand to help Ginny up.
"Phineas Nigella said Arthur's been badly injured."
"Ask Harry," said Fred.
"Yeah, I want to hear this for myself," said George.
The twins and Ginny were staring at him. Creature's footsteps had stopped on the stairs outside.
"It was..."
Harry began. This was even worse than telling McGonagall and Dumbledore.
"I had a kind of vision."
And he told them all that he had seen, though he altered the story so that it sounded as though he had watched from the sidelines as the snake attacked, rather than from behind the snake's own eyes. Ron, who was still very white, gave him a fleeting look but did not speak. When Harry had finished, Fred, George, and Ginny continued to stare at him for a moment. Harry did not know whether he was imagining it or not, but he fancied there was something accusatory in their looks. Well, if they were going to blame him for just seeing the attack, he was glad he had not told them that he had been inside the snake at the time.
"Is Mum here?"
said Fred, turning to Sirius.
"She probably doesn't even know what's happened yet," said Sirius. "The important thing was to get you away before Umbridge could interfere. I expect Dumbledore's letting Molly know now."
"We've got to go to St. Mungo's," said Ginny urgently.
She looked around at her brothers. They were, of course, still in their pajamas.
"Sirius, can you lend us cloaks or anything?"
"Hang on, you can't go tearing off to St. Mungo's," said Sirius.
"Course we can go to St. Mungo's if we want," said Fred with a mulish expression. "He's our dad."
"And how are you going to explain how you knew Arthur was attacked before the hospital even let his wife know?"
"What does that matter?" said George hotly.
"It matters because we don't want to draw attention to the fact that Harry is having visions of things that are happening hundreds of miles away," said Sirius angrily. "Have you any idea what the Ministry would make of that information?"
Fred and George looked as though they could not care less what the Ministry made of anything. Ron was still white-faced and silent. Ginny said,
"Somebody else could have told us. We could have heard it somewhere other than Harry."
"Like who?"
said Sirius impatiently.
"Listen, your dad's been hurt while on duty for the Order, and the circumstances are fishy enough without his children knowing about it seconds after it happened. You could seriously damage the Order's..."
"We don't care about the dumb Order," shouted Fred.
"It's our dad dying we're talking about," yelled George. "Your father knew what he was getting into, and he won't thank you for messing things up for the Order," said Sirius angrily in his turn. "This is how it is. This is why you're not in the Order. You don't understand. There are things worth dying for."
"Easy for you to say, stuck here," bellowed Fred. "I don't see you risking your neck."
The little colour remaining in Sirius's face strained from it. He looked for a moment as though he would quite like to hit Fred, but when he spoke, it was in a voice of determined calm.
"I know it's hard, but we've all got to act as though we don't know anything yet. We've got to stay put, at least until we hear from your mother, all right?"
Fred and George still looked mutinous. Ginny, however, took a few steps over to the nearest chair and sank into it. Harry looked at Ron, who made a funny movement somewhere between a nod and a shrug, and they sat down too. The twins glared at Sirius for another minute, then took seats on either side of Ginny.
"That's right," said Sirius encouragingly. "Come on, let's all have a drink while we're waiting. Accio butterbeer."
He raised his wand as he spoke, and half a dozen bottles came flying toward them out of the pantry, skidded along the table, scattering the debris of Sirius's meal, and stopped neatly in front of the six of them. They all drank, and for a while the only sounds were those of the crackling of the kitchen fire and the soft thud of their bottles on the table. Harry was only drinking to have something to do with his hands. His stomach was full of horrible, hot, bubbling guilt. They would not be here if it were not for him. They would all still be asleep in bed, and it was no good telling himself that by raising the alarm he had ensured that Mr. Weasley was found. Because there was also the inescapable business of it being he who had attacked Mr. Weasley in the first place. "Don't be stupid, you haven't got fangs," he told himself, trying to keep calm, though the hand on his butterbeer bottle was shaking. "You were lying in bed. You weren't attacking anyone." "But then, what just happened in Dumbledore's office?" he asked himself. "I felt like I wanted to attack Dumbledore, too."